It improved my outlook remarkably, as well as my intelligence. He smiled slowly. Not his usual brilliant smile, and I wondered for a minute if he were Erdrick. They switched places sometimes, and it was surprisingly difficult, even with their widely disparate personalities, to tell which was which.
Erdrick was right, he said. He told me once that he didn't think you were as stupid as everyone thought you were.
Stupid enough to lose Hurog, I returned. He shrugged and resumed his rapid pace towards the distinctive blue tent. Do you have camping equipment? For the woods, but there are no trees here. At Beckram's gesture, a couple of men took the horses to be stabled while we saw about our packs. After a bit of rearranging, we stored our goods in a tent vacated for us. When the work was done, Axiel settled a hand on Penrod's shoulder.
We'll go see what Stala's up to and tell her you're safe, Ward.
Bastia and Ciara should go with you and tell her that they've moved into her tent, I said.
Ciara nodded her head enthusiastically and patted her sword. Then she dashed off, leaving the rest to follow. Soon as they were safely away, Beckram turned to my brother and gave him a bear hug.
It's good to see you, Tostin. I see you still have that harp I gave you.
Beckram always could charm the birds out of the trees, and he managed to charm a smile out of Tostin. I hadn't known the harp was my cousin's gift.
He was supporting himself at a tavern in Terfanig, I said.
Beckram raised his eyebrows.
At Terfanig? I'm surprised you didn't find him before this.
He took me to Terfanig in the first place, Tostin turned his smile to me.
To a sailor's inn, Beckram looked at me. Maybe you're not as smart as I thought.
I shook my head, but Tostin jumped in to defend me before I could say anything.
No, he left me with a cooper.
Beckram laughed.
He would, and he'd expect you to stay there, wouldn't he?
The cooper was a good man, my brother replied hotly. If I'd had no other place to go, I could have been happy there.
Tostin was defending me. I couldn't be sure. Maybe it was the cooper.
Who's this? Beckram nodded at Orig. He was trying his best to be part of the scenery.
Another Hurog, I said.
Orig, this is our cousin, Beckram. Beckram, meet Orig.
You never told Ward what the Blue Guard is doing here, said Orig softly without acknowledging the greeting.
Of course he knew Beckram already, and Orig wasn't happy about the way my cousin teased Ciara. Beckram gave Orig a cool, assessing look, then smiled tightly at me.
You did a better job of guarding your brother than I ever did mine.
Erdrick's dead.
I sucked in a deep breath, but he continued before I could say anything. I was sleeping with the queen and misstepped somehow. Jacobin killed Erdrick by mistake because he looked like me.
It was ride out with Havernus or kill the bastard. His voice was light and quick, belying the bloodlust in his eyes. I saw then that the expression he wore to greet us was a mask covering a core of soul-deep rage. I reached out and touched his shoulder, but there was no room in him for comfort, and he stepped away from me. Erdrick was dead. It didn't seem possible.
When I took my brother's body back to father, he sent the Blue Guard back with me.
So Havernus took the Blue Guard as his 100? I asked, changing the subject, because that seemed to be what Beckram wanted.
No. He already had most of them picked out.
The king made a mistake, commented Alizon, stepping around a tent. The king's half-brother had discarded his usual court robes and colors. Dressed in hunting leathers, he looked much more dangerous than I'd ever seen him. I couldn't tell if he'd been listening to us or if he'd just happened to come upon us, but I knew which one I'd lay odds on.
He chose to kill Beckram, continued Alizon. Knowing that Hurog is not very important, virtually penniless holding in the lands of the northern barbarians,
Alizon's voice showed that he clearly was not so stupid. I was. It sounded like an accurate description of Hurog to me. He believed Hurog's strength vanished with the death of the remarkable bastard who'd ruled it for so many years. So, Durok gave him an example of the power of the Hurog name. He brought half the nobles of Shavig with Beckram to the capital and shoved the Blue Guard down my brother's throat. Hurog fights as one, indeed.
Alizon grinned, a boyish expression that belied the cleverness in his eyes. Shavigmen have a long memory. They know who their king would be, though there hasn't been a king in Shavig for centuries. It was obvious to everyone that Durok was perfectly willing to begin a rebellion right then and there. He wanted the king's hide nailed to the wall.
but he was willing to settle for adequate protection of his remaining son.
Better the king count himself lucky my father wasn't still with us, I said. The Hurig meeting would have killed Jacobin and let politics take care of themselves.
And he had many other fine qualities as well, murmured Orig.
What are you doing here, Ward? Asked Alizon suddenly. And I might add, my, how you've changed.
I'm told that Ornstonian air has that effect. Tostin looked at the ground as he spoke.
Or maybe it's the apples.
My father's death seems to account for most of it, I said. Being too smart didn't seem healthy while he was alive. As to what I'm doing here, I heard about Ornstone's troubles and thought to myself, what they need is a Shavigman to show the Ornstonians how to fight. I ended up with a few more volunteers than I needed. Two Shavigmen are worth a few hundred Vorseg. Ed Tostin?
Alizon's gaze narrowed abruptly on my brother.
Tostin said, he'd been saying that we should have left a few behind, but who knew the women would be such fighters? We've considered conquering Ornstone and holding it as a fiefdom as well as Vorsag. But Ward tells me it would be rude to conquer a country twice in a century.
Tostin had broadened his speech into rough Northlander. Beckram's flashing smile lit his face at last. He slapped Tostin on the back.
Fair sounds like a proper Shavik barbarian. Now that we've got him here, we've nothing to worry about.
Better not let the Ornstonians hear you talk like that, said Alizon repressively.
No one likes to hear the truth, said my Aunt Stala. I'd been aware of someone approaching, but since they were wearing the blues colors, I hadn't paid much heed.
Stala! I caught her up, armor and all, and swung her around. Put me down, boy, she said, though I could tell she was pleased. I'd hoped that old Axial would have better sense than to allow you to play soldier down here.
I set her down. He didn't have much say in it.
You've lost some weight.
I shrugged, and Tostin said,
Ornstonians don't like selling supplies to Shavigmen. Last time Northlanders were down here, we did a fair job of alienating the villagers.
I guess Stala hadn't noticed him when she'd approached, because her jaw dropped, and she said,
Tostin? In a small voice.
He hugged her self-consciously and stood a little awkwardly when her arms tightened fiercely rather than releasing him. At last she stood back and looked him over.
I have all my fingers and toes on Stala, he complained mildly.
So you really did squirrel him away someplace?
Stala didn't look away from Tostin as she spoke. He needed to get away someplace safe, I said. Not even to her would I tell Tostin's secret, though the memory of his blood lying between him and me like some pool of awful truth was as clear in my mind as if it had been a moment ago.
I'm hungry, Orig said. I wonder if there's anything we can scrounge to eat.
At supper, I sat at the high table with Havernus, Alizon, and Beckram. The rest of my troop ate with Stala and the Blue Guard. Havernus set a fine meal, and not the least of its attractions was his daughter. Oh, there were sweet maids aplenty here, many of them daughters and wives of Ornstonian nobles sent here for safekeeping. One beauty with flaming hair cascading in waves down her back stole shy glances my way and then blushed when I nodded at her. But it was Havernus's daughter who caught my full attention. Tasala was more akin to my Aunt Stala than the prettily clothed maidens. Curly, dark hair, trimmed short as a man's, covered her well-shaped head. Her face wasn't pretty. She shared her nose, a slim, too-long blade, with her father, along with his square build and tall frame. Her hands were swordsman's hands, and bore the scars of someone well used to fighting. And for all that, she wore a woman's confining gown with grace. I remember hearing that Havernus left his lands in his daughter's hands while he was at court, but I hadn't expected that she would be more than an administrator. She hadn't gotten those scars arguing with clerks. Once the course had been served, she looked me over and said, "What's an idiot doing in the middle of a war?" I smirked at her, liking her instantly. "It takes an idiot to get into the middle of a war," I pointed out, "especially when it's not even on my own lands." I glanced around and noticed Bastia watching me, an odd look in her eye. When I nodded to her, she turned her attention back to her food. Havernus snorted.
You see why I never took her to court.
My father wouldn't have taken me if he'd been given a choice, I said. Have you had a chance to look at the villages the Vorsag had hit? He nodded, sobering. Every village had a temple to Marin. That's not really surprising, since almost every village has some sort of temple, but he pointed his knife at me. All the ones that were hit had some object of real power. I've spoken to my mage and my priest, and they're putting together a list of other villages that fit your conditions. We ate for a while, real food, hot and well-seasoned. As we waited for the next course, Havernus said, I'm going to send out armed parties to each of the villages on the list, keeping the larger forces here at Kallus until I can pinpoint where the bastards are. They've got a base in Arnstone. They're too deep in country for anything else. I grunted and finished swallowing a piece of duck. My troop has come this far. We might as well be of use. Give us one of your villages. I'd hoped you'd say that. I don't have an unlimited number of trained men and just the one wizard. Most of the men I brought from Estien are readying their own estates to face a Vorsagian invasion. I ate another small piece of duck. You'll forgive my question, but isn't building up armies on such scale illegal? Demons take Jacobin and his laws, said Havernus heavily. It had taken a lot, I saw, for him to break his oaths of loyalty. But Jacobin's refusal to rescue Arnstone had done it. Jacobin had, in fact, broken his oath first. By the time the king can do anything about it, Alison said, we'll have driven the kingdom's enemy out of Arnstone, and he'll have nothing to do but congratulate these men for saving his throne. If he prosecutes, he'll have the nobles of all the lands against him, and he's just smart enough to know that. I nodded. Especially since you'll tell him so. Exactly so, murmured Alison sweetly.
You look like you stayed up and celebrated last night, said a raspy woman's voice, frigid with disapproval.
I opened one eye and looked first at Havernus's daughter, who stared down her long nose at me, then around the empty tent and attempted to remember what I'd been celebrating last night.
Your men are up and at practice already. The small man who seemed to be in command told me I could find you here. My father has a village for us to go to.
I hadn't been carousing, but Stala and I had talked late into the night about Erdrick's death and Arnstonian politics. My body was trying to insist that it needed a few more minutes to recover, but it didn't appear that Tisala was going to let me rest. I rolled stiffly to my feet, bent, and touched my toes a time or two to stretch. Arnstonians have confounded long names, and they never shorten them, I said to distract her from my condition. I suppose I should call you Tissa or Lally.
Not if you want to keep your tongue, she tossed back.
I thought I caught a glimpse of a dimple, but her voice was serious.
You look stupid, commented Tisala, riding beside me.
I learned Havernus's definition of small was an order of magnitude larger than mine. In addition to my troop 7, Havernus had sent his daughter and her 50 sworn men.
Stupid, she said again, shaking her head.
I thought about crossing my eyes and drooling at her, but she didn't need any encouragement from me to continue.
I think it's the eyes. No one expects brilliance out of a man with eyelashes like that. Her disapproval was plain.
I wondered what she thought I should have done about my eyelashes. Thank you, I murmured. But I thought it was the color myself.
She had brown eyes, too. I wondered if she'd catch the insult. Maybe it's your size, she went on, turning her face to scrutinize the forest around us, but not before I caught sight of a betraying dimple.
Large means stupid? I relaxed in enjoyment as I realized she was teasing me. It gave me something to wonder about instead of dead cousins and the aching eyes from too little sleep.
Everyone expects big people to be slow and stolid, she said.
I didn't see any tension in her, but her thin, narrow-hipped war stallion arched its neck and sidled. If the stallion weighed half what Pansy did, I'd have been surprised. On its back, Tisala did look oversized. Funny, I hadn't really thought about her height, but she was as tall as her father, who was accounted a tall man, though not nearly as tall as I. For a woman, being as tall as a man was no light thing. Slow, huh? And stolid, I asked. She must have heard the comprehension in my voice because her chin tilted up and her formidable brows lowered. I grinned. It would help if you had a real horse rather than a skinny cow-hocked pony. He wasn't cow-hocked much, just enough to make her sensitive and steer our teasing to a place less painful for her.
Better to ride a cow-hocked pony than a dullard plow horse. The chill in her voice would have frosted a potter's kiln.
Dullard, I thought, looking at Pansy. I supposed her observation had merit.
He was paying no attention to her stallion, walking with a relaxed air that might indeed have belonged to a draft animal. The image was helped by the long threads of grass hanging from his mouth. He must have snatched it when I wasn't paying attention. Not much left of the murderous beast who'd terrified my grooms. Not this morning.
His name is Pansy, I said with painful dignity. If you're going to insult him, you ought to at least know his name.
On my other side, Ciara snickered. Tasala looked from my sister's face to mine, nodded her head to Ciara, and said, Your brother is a terrible tease.
Ciara raised her eyebrows.
No, I'm not, Tasala snapped. I'm blunt and rude. Just ask anyone.
Ciara smiled broadly and tilted her chin at me.
I have to agree with her, Ciara, I said sadly. Anyone who calls my poor Pansy a dullard must be blunt and rude.
Rat, commented Tasala. I can't believe you carried it off. How many years did you fool them that you were stupid?
Ciara held up 7 fingers.
7? Tasala shook her head. 7 years of holding your tongue.
It would have killed me.
Probably, I agreed.
She laughed. Is he always this bad?
Ciara shook her head firmly, then raised her eyes to the sky.
Not possible, said Tasala. He couldn't have been worse.
There weren't many people who could read the language Ciara spoke. Penrod, used to the silent speaking of his charges, could talk to her almost as well as I. Tostin could a little, but Tasala was the first woman who'd conversed with her with such matter-of-fact ease. Bastia tended to avoid Ciara, as if my sister's inability to speak made her uncomfortable. I'd been avoiding thinking about Bastia. When I was 15, the daughter of one of Penrod's grooms had been the love of my life. She had been 20, gentle and cheerful. When I was 16, she broke my heart by marrying a merchant in Terfanic. I understood her reasons and knew they were good ones. I even liked her husband, though that had taken me a good long time. After her, I'd slept with a few who had taught me that the act without love was dreary indeed. I felt nothing more for Bastia than I did for Axial. Less, perhaps, given that I should have refused her outright rather than leaving the possibility open for some later time. I hadn't had the chance for private conversation until now, but the ride was too good an opportunity.
If you'll excuse me, ladies, I said, I'll desert the field of battle, for no man wins a war with a lady's tongue.
Ciara stuck her lady's tongue out at me.
The trail we were riding through the overgrown forest was wide enough for a wagon, so Pansy and I had little trouble working back to the rear ranks where Bastia rode with Oryk. I turned to ride beside them.
Go talk to Ciara, Oryk. See if Havernus's daughter is any happier with you than she is with me.
She finds you objectionable?
Bastia sounded amused.
I believe it is my eyelashes.
Oryk batted his eyes at me.
Mine are prettier than yours, Bord. She's bound to like them.
When he'd ridden off, I slowed until we brought up the rear. I switched to Avon Hellish, which I spoke with a terrible accent, but well enough for my purpose, which was to ensure that no one overheard what I had to say to Bastia. I believe I owe you an explanation, Bastia. Her marvelous eyes sparkled in the dappled light, and she smiled.
An explanation for what, Ward?
For my refusal of your offer the night before we came to Kallus. Her smile fled as if it had never been.
How so?
If we had not been on duty that night, I would have taken you up on your offer, and it would have been wrong.
Ah.
Her gelding bowed his head against her white-fingered grip on the reins.
I am too old for you. Perhaps Tasala suits you better.
I shook my head. Not too old. I couldn't let her think this had anything to do with Tasala. For you, sex is a game. One you play very well. But I cannot view it that way.
You sound like a virgin bride.
Her voice was brittle with hurt. I shook my head. My first lover taught me that love only works between equals. And she had been right. She had led and I followed, unable and unwilling to break out of my idiot act, even where I loved. You and I are not equal in this. You can sleep with Axial and Penrod without causing them to fret. Anyone who can do that is far more skilled than I am.
My second lover taught me that coupling without love is worse than nothing. At least for me. And you don't love me.
Do you love me?
I wouldn't have asked if I hadn't known the answer.
Her chin went up, and she didn't say anything.
I should have said this that night. There is no love between us, lady. Respect and lust, yes, at least on my part. But not love.
You will regret this, she said with a careful smile to hide the hurt in her eyes.
Lady, my body already does, I said ruefully. But it is the right thing. I will not play games.
She did not reply, and after a few moments I decided it might be best to give her some time to herself. As I rode past Penrod and Axiel, I jerked my head and both of them fell back to ride behind Bastia.
The priest looked at us blandly.
We are here to protect these things. They are dedicated to Meryn, and we must keep them in her temple.
The temple in question was a little timber building, half the size of the peasant huts of the town. The priest, Oreg, Bastia, Axiel, and I were the only ones inside, as there simply wasn't room for anyone else. T'Salla had tried to talk to the priest for a few minutes before throwing her arms up and stalking off to get the rest of the little village into packing up and leaving. I hoped she was getting further than I.
Except for the armband, they're not much, reported Org from the altar where he and Bastia were getting a better look at the items in question. What magic they had upon them has faded. The armband was powerful once, but there's no shape to the magic anymore.
The priest was visibly displeased with Oreg's assessment.
They are not worth your life. Even the goddess knows that, Axiel said.
I'd left the negotiations to Axiel once T'Salla left, since he looked the least like a Northman and spoke Ornstonian.
I know that, my son.
The priest set aside his irritation to smile gently at the Dwarf King's son.
But my word is worth my life. If I die in her service, I shall be with her forever.
You're aiding the enemy, said Oreg unexpectedly. These don't seem to be powerful, but if the Vorsag gain enough of them, and if they have the right sort of knowledge, they can use this to destroy even the memory of Arenstone and the great healer Meryn. If you take them to a fortified place, they will still be hers.
But the priest would lose his power outside this village, and he knew it.
You imply Meryn cannot protect her temple, chided the priest.
Oreg moved to my side.
There are rules the gods must follow, or they invite destruction. If she steps in to protect this temple, the Vorsagian gods can act on their behalf too.
Perhaps the Vorsag serve Meryn too. Perhaps she has decreed that they shall have the sacred objects.
The priest was enjoying this. T'Salla said that to persuade someone, you had to know who they were and what they wanted. What made a priest of Meryn? They were a peasant group loosely knit with little higher organization. As Oreg continued to argue, I thought about what we must look like to the priest. Shavigmen, or at least not Ornstonian. But he'd been no more ready to listen to T'Salla. The followers of Meryn were men of the land, farmers and herdsmen, peasants. If a peasant had spoken to a nobleman's messengers the way that this priest was, my father would have him whipped until he couldn't stand up. But a priest was different. I looked at the priest's calloused hands. He helped in the fields. Perhaps he had his own herds.
I broke in, interrupting Oreg rudely. They're mages. What do they know about the way of the healer? Good with a fancy argument, they are.
I'd heard enough peasant Ornstonian to know I'd gotten the accent close to right.
Nobles who sit in stone halls don't understand the goddess.
I worked the land myself before I took up the sword. And didn't I feel her hand guide my plow? I thought my father's head herdsman might be a man of the priest's ilk, and his mannerisms weren't difficult to adopt.
Doesn't mean I don't think you ought to take whatever the goddess holds sacred and save it for her.
I nodded at the armband that held its place of honor on the altar.
Hate to see that on the arm of one of those heathens who burned Silverfells and stole the Dragonstone.
For the first time, the priest looked shaken in his convictions.
If you take them with you to Kallus, I said, as soon as Cariarn turns his attention elsewhere, you can return them to their place.
I heard something odd outside. He took a deep breath.
I suppose. Temporarily.
It was the faint clash of steel on steel I'd heard. I left the priest dithering to Oreg and took a quick step to the temple door and peered out. It required no more than a glance.
To arms! I bellowed, as if I wasn't the last person to see. Raiders!
They had doubtless meant to sneak up on the village, but had met with a few of Tassala's men who had been in the outskirts of town. I tore out of the temple and was on Pansy's back before I'd finished speaking. The few men hadn't slowed the mass of Vorsag down much, but by the time I arrived at the fighting, they'd run into the larger block of our troops and their forward progress had slowed to a crawl. Pansy screamed, a harsh, shrill stallion's warning, and plunged into battle, and time slowed. Everything in me was concentrated on each moment, each block, each blow, each life lost. I became gradually aware that Tostin fought on my left and Penrod my right, but it had no meaning beyond the moment. I loved the battle, even when it was against scarecrow bandits. Here, where sword met sword and I tested myself against the metal of my opponent, it meant something when my sword sank deeply into flesh. Pansy told me with twitches of ears and muscles where he was going to move, and he listened in turn to my shifts of weight. We brought death to our enemies, and I loved the power of it. And that final love, one I shared with my father, frightened me more than any battle ever could. Axiel had been right. A real battle was different. The knowledge that here at last I was facing my own kind, warriors trained in martial arts, added the sweetness of competition to the fray. These men had a real chance of killing me, as the bandits we'd fought before did not. For these were regular army men. For all, they wore outlaws' rags over their armor. Stala would have told me to pull the men because our armies were too evenly matched. There would be no victor here, just dead men to litter the ground. But there were villagers behind us, unarmed women and children I'd been sent to protect. A long-fought battle has a flow to it. Fierce speed when I was in the heart of the enemy army, followed by almost peaceful moments when Pansy and I broke through the battle lines and there were none to come against us. I held Pansy there to give him a rest and saw that there were others doing the same. In one such pause, Tassala joined me, meeting my grin with one of her own before the years of command fell back upon her shoulders. "We are evenly matched," she said. I nodded, moving my right shoulder to try to restore some feeling to my arm. "I hope that occurs to the Vorsagian commander soon. We can't let them through to the village, but if the Vorsag don't pull back, there won't be many of either side left." She scanned the battle and pointed to a group of her men who were cornered. Without another word, we both put our horses at the enemy. Her stallion was as hot for battle as Pansy and nearly as well trained, but Pansy's heavier build made him a more effective weapon. When he shouldered a Vorsagian horse, the other horse went down with its rider. Tassala's style of fighting was different from my own, with flourishes designed as much to cow the enemy as anything else, but she killed as quickly as I did. At another lull in the fighting, I noticed the sun hung low in the sky, though I'd have sworn it was still early afternoon. Pansy's head hung low, and I rocked back and forth with the force of his breathing. "The commander's breaking off," Penrod rode up to me, his teeth flashing white in the dark blood and gore of his face. "They weren't expecting a troop of fighters here. They outnumber us, but not enough to make this anything but a bloodbath for us both." "A good general never wins a close fight," I quoted my aunt. "He pulls his men out before his losses are high and hits the enemy another time." "Your aunt never left her troops behind." I followed his gaze and saw that the man who'd been commanding the Vorsag was escaping through the trees, while his underlings were organizing a retreat in a slightly different direction. "Shall we go after him?" I asked. Without waiting for his reply, I sent Pansy leaping over a slippery mass of bodies and we galloped after the fleeing man. Beyond the growth of trees was a short limestone cliff. Pansy and I drew up beside it just in time to see the Vorsag scamper over the top. He'd abandoned his horse, so I jumped off Pansy and dropped his reins to the ground. I could hear Penrod doing likewise behind me. "Do you think he's gone up here?" I said. No one answered. Something hit me in the arm. I spun around, sword upraised, and saw Penrod with a surprised look on his face. In his hand was a dagger red with my blood.
Behind him, my brother pulled his sword out of Penrod, and the horseman slid to the ground.
Penrod?
I said blankly, for the scene was too strange for understanding.
Tostin.
Tostin dropped his sword and looked at me.
He was trying to kill you, he said, sounding as shocked as I felt. I followed you and saw him raise his dagger to stab you in the back.
Warm blood wet my hand, attesting to Penrod's attack. Penrod lay face up on the ground, the terrible wound hidden underneath him. He smiled palely at me.
I'm glad.
His voice was a hoarse echo of itself.
I couldn't stop.
I had to drop to my knees to hear him, but he didn't say anything more. His body convulsed and he died in the messy way all men do. Tears gathered in my eyes, and I blinked them away. Tostin bent down slowly and picked up his sword, cleaning it on the bottom of his shirt as he stared at the dead man.
I didn't even realize it was Penrod until I struck him.
Penrod had been a mainstay of his childhood, too. What there was of it. I looked up at Tostin.
He died fighting the Vorsag.
Yes, he said, understanding perfectly without further explanation. Penrod's name wouldn't be blackened by betrayal. He bent and closed Penrod's eyes, then knelt beside me.
Sifirin guard his path.
Why would Penrod try to kill you? Tostin asked. I shook my head, feeling incredulous, although the evidence of Penrod's attempted murder was throbbing painfully. It made no sense.
Some wizards can control people for a brief time, said Bastia's voice thoughtfully.
From the way Tostin started, he hadn't heard her approach, either. She walked up to us in her blood-spattered leathers.
But to do that, the wizard has to be nearby.
There was something wrong with her voice. She and Penrod had been lovers, but she sounded as detached as the huntmaster looking at the stag he'd just brought down. Bastille leaned over me to get a better look at Penrod and balanced herself with a hand on my shoulder. I remember a flash of energy gathering there between us. Then blackness claimed me, and I knew no more.
Chapter 12. Callus. Becrum. Commanders are used to losing people on the field of battle, but usually there's a body. The only thing Becrum could work up enthusiasm for were the daily practices with Stala. There he could focus on the fight, and the aching grief and guilt faded, leaving only the empty hole where his brother had been. Stala no longer let him fight with the other men. She forced him to pay attention to his defense by hitting him with the flat of her blade.
Do that in battle, and you'll be missing an arm, she snapped.
He responded with a swift thrust and a series of moves that kept her too busy to talk for a few minutes. Only after she disarmed him did he realize that he'd followed no pattern, and if any of his swings had connected, he'd have killed her, which was, of course, why she'd quit letting him fight with anyone else. He made no move to pick up his sword, just swayed a little on his feet and concentrated on not falling down. Sorry. Let's try it again. He noticed that she wasn't even breathing hard. Slowly, he picked up the sword again and faced her. I'm not going to take the news to your father that he's lost another son, Becrum. Her voice was not unkind. If it takes a few bruises, then that's your choice, not mine. When she was through with him, he staggered to his tent and collapsed on his bedroll. Sometimes, when he was this tired, he didn't dream. If no one disturbed him, he might sleep as long as an hour. He closed his eyes, but it wasn't sleep that came to him, but thoughts of his cousin. All in all, he thought, Ward's sudden recovery of his wits made him even more unlikable. Instead of a fool, he was a manipulator. All those incidental remarks in public that caused Becrum to squirm had been deliberate. Not that he'd been the only one to suffer. Despite himself, Becrum grinned, remembering Lord Ibram's widow's face after she'd made the mistake of propositioning Ward in a public place a few years ago. Even then, Ward had been as large as a man full grown. Becrum felt a great deal of satisfaction at her embarrassment, as she had gone out of her way to torment Erdrick the night before, tittering with her gaggle of friends over the hick who'd worn a shirt with a stain on it to a formal dinner. She'd reduced Erdrick, 16, to public tears. Beckram's smile died as he realized that Ward had witnessed that little incident, too. Had Ward been defending Erdrick? He remembered the look on Ward's face when he'd told him about Erdrick's death. Shocked sorrow had been followed by cold rage that chilled Ward's eyes until they didn't look like a cow's at all. If he'd met Ward just this week, he might have liked him. Yesterday, over dinner, Ward told the story of how he'd escaped Hurog and reduced the whole table to tears of mirth, even Alizon. Lying now in the dimness of the tent, Beckram doubted any of it had been funny at the time. The whole lot of Ward's band looked worse for wear. Their clothes, not much more than well-mended rags.
Beckram, called a familiar voice outside his tent.
Kirkovanal!
The direwolf's second son was one of Beckram's few real friends, so he sat up instead of sending him away as he would have anyone else.
Come in.
Kirkovanal stepped into the tent and tied the flap closed behind him. His red hair had been recently shorn in the traditional Arnstonian manner, leaving a pale strip of skin above both ears.
Someone told me your cousin was here, he said abruptly.
That's right. Beckram crossed his legs and gestured for Kirkovanal to sit beside him. And it appears my uncle's death left Ward strangely recovered from his mental affliction.
What's he doing with Cirnax Bastia?
Beckram snapped his fingers. That's where I'd seen her before. I don't think I ever knew her name.
So what's she doing with Ward?
Beckram frowned at his friend's obvious agitation. You knew Ward lost Hurog because he tried to stop Garanon from taking back one of Cirnax's slaves.
Bastia was that slave?
Kirkovanal sounded dumbfounded as if it had never occurred to him.
It's not as if Cirnax has more than 10 or 12, Beckram said.
What's wrong?
The Arnstonian rubbed his hands over his face.
Did you ever pay attention to what went on in Cirnax's tavern?
Did you notice how many of the patrons were Arnstonian?
Beckram shook his head. But now that I think on it...
I didn't notice either, confessed Kirkovanal. Not until Garanon cornered me a couple of years ago. He told me that since I was determined to drink myself to death, I might as well make myself useful while I did it. It was he who pulled together what Cirnax's game was.
Cirnax working with the Arnstonian rebels, guessed Beckram?
No,
Kirkovanal's voice was low. He's working for Vorsag.
What?
Beckram shook his head to see if that helped connect a wild bunch of useless Arnstonian lordlings with Vorsag.
Who do the Arnstonian lords hate more than Vorsag? Asked Kirkovanal.
The Talvin, answered Beckram instantly.
Sifirin, guard me, do you mean that we have Arnstonians helping the Vorsag?
Kirkovanal shook his head.
Not as you mean it, anyway. Think about the men at Cirnax. They're all like me. Orphans of the rebellion with no power, not even over our own estates. They don't have the ability to help the Vorsag, but some of them might not mind giving information.
But you were talking about Bastia. To Beckram's surprise, Kirkovanal gave him a sick smile.
Yes, I was. Because I was working for Garanon, I paid attention to what went on at Cirnax, and I noticed a few things. Bastia is a mage.
Beckram nodded. That's what Ward says, too.
Didn't you ever wonder how a mage got to be a slave?
I did, and I noticed that Cirnax never gave her an order, never crossed her in any way.
All right, said Beckram. I didn't notice her much one way or the other. I'll accept your word that Bastia was an unusual slave, but I don't see what has you so upset about her being with Ward.
Do you like your cousin?
He asked.
Beckram laughed shortly. I was just wondering that myself, but I think the answer might be yes.
Do you remember Paulon? The lad who was killed by robbers in Shade Town last year?
Of course I do.
About a month before he died, he approached me at my apartments. He was 3 sheets to the wind, and it was only mid-morning. I cleaned him up and found a spare bed for him, but before he passed out, he told me that Bastia had raped and tortured him.
Kirkovanal shut his mouth abruptly and looked away.
I didn't believe him. He was drunk. Who's ever heard of a man being raped by a woman?
Beckram was so sensitized to guilt that he could read it in someone else at 50 paces.
You think he was killed deliberately? Because he told you that Bastia had hurt him?
Kirkovanal smiled tightly,
released it, and drew a shaky breath. I think someone, maybe Paulon himself, told her that he'd talk to me. The last time I went to Cyrnax, abruptly he surged to his feet, hands clenched at his side. I haven't told anyone this. I don't know if... He began pacing back and forth. Did I ever tell you that your cousin did me a good turn once? I was in Shadetown, and I ran into a few thugs looking for easy money. One of them knocked me to my knees, and the next thing I know, the whole alley is full of motionless lumps. Your cousin patted me on my head and asked if I'm dead. Kirkcovenal stopped, his back toward Beckram. I went to Cyrnax shortly after Paulon died. I didn't think there was any connection because I still didn't believe Paulon's story. The next thing I knew, Kirkcovenal stumbled to a halt. He grabbed the bottom of his shirt and pulled it up, turning so his back was to Beckram. Gods, swore Beckram. Even the dimness of the tent couldn't disguise the severity of the scars on Kirkcovenal's back. He jerked his shirt back in place. It wasn't the worst part of what she did to me. I thought I was a dead man. Why didn't she kill you too? Beckram asked. She had me there for 2 days. I convinced her Paulon never said anything to me, that I thought I'd paid her to hurt me while I was drunk, as if I'd paid women to do that to me before. I said she had to keep it quiet, that my brother would cut me off if he found out I'd been paying to have women beat me. It seems to have worked. I'm alive. He turned back to Beckram. I haven't had so much as a drop of wine since. Beckram stood up. Thank you. Ward needs to know this. Do you know who I should ask to find out where Ward is? He rode out this morning with Bastia, and I can't for the life of me remember where he told me he was going. Kirkcovenal nodded. I'll find out. Then I'll take you there myself. Tisala nursed her left arm as she listened to her sub-lieutenant list the men who had died and the ones who were wounded. She knew every man in her command down to his favorite color, and losing them was hard. 14 of her 50 were dead today. Another dozen were seriously wounded, and the rest were all sporting cuts and bruises. She directed the sub-lieutenant to see the gathering of enough wood to build a pyre for the dead. She would see to mounting a guard herself. No sense being caught unprepared if the Vorsag decided to return unexpectedly. Then she sifted out of 10 of her men who were still the hole to mount a patrol. She'd just finished with her orders when the priest came shuffling up to whine at her.
The goddess's artifacts need an escort to Kallus, he said.
We'll all be going back to bring this news to my father, she said.
You and the people of the village are welcome to come with us when we leave tomorrow morning. There are not enough riding animals in the village, she interrupted him impatiently.
We'll mount who we can, but the rest will have to walk. Tell them to pack lightly, because they'll have to carry what they take. He looked disappointed. Did he want to leave half the village behind? Exasperated, Tisala turned on her heel and strode to the pyre to see how far they'd come in laying it. Before she made it there, the slender, dark-haired wizard who'd traveled with Ward of Hurog caught her arm.
Have you seen my lord? He said urgently. Penrod's horse was caught running loose, and I can't find him, nor is there any sign of the Hurogmeaton.
She frowned. Some battlefields seemed to swallow the dead, but this one wasn't that big.
Just before the retreat, I saw Ward chase off into some trees. I think some of your people were following. Which trees?
Tisala looked at the strain on his face and compared it to the work she still needed to do.
I'll show you. Let me get my horse.
One of Ward's men lay in the shelter of the woods, killed by a clean sword thrust from behind, and Orog almost fell off his mount in his scramble to examine the fallen man.
Penrod!
He checked pulse points, but she could see that the man had shed too much blood to live. While the wizard fiddled with the body, she paced out the clearing. Here that big beast Ward rode had stood for a short while. Impossible to mistake the size of hoofprints. The ground was too soft with rain and dense with grass to hold many indications other than the most obvious. She couldn't distinguish the human footprints from the general muck.
The horses went off this way.
She let her voice trail off when she got a good look at the wizard. She took half a dozen quick steps and thrust a shoulder under his arm before he fell.
Are you wounded?
With an eerie, keening sound, he became a dead weight. The bushes behind them shook. Tisala dropped the wizard and drew her sword, but it was only another of Ward's people, Axial.
She only remembered his name because her father had said it was Dwarven, and the dwarves used to trade at Kallus. Axial took a quick look at the dead man before he knelt beside the wailing boy.
Aurig!
Does he do this often?
She had to raise her voice to be heard.
Never seen him do this.
Axial took the younger man's face in his hands.
Aurig, what's wrong? What happened to Penrod?
The mage jerked away and curled into a fetal position, but he quit wailing.
He's gone. My fault, he's gone.
Who?
Ward, I think, answered Tistala when Aurig didn't reply. We came out looking for him and found Penrod here. Ward's stallion has been here as well as a couple of other horses, but I can't tell much more.
Without a word, Axial began to pace the little clearing as she had. After a moment, he returned and nodded.
If we'd had a foot or two less rain in the past few months, I could do better. Someone took 3 horses off in that general direction and set another free. Probably Penrod's. All 3 of the horses were big, which means that they belonged to our group rather than yours. Aurig's here. Penrod's dead. Ciara's helping with the wounded. That leaves Ward, Tostin, and Bastia.
They left together?
He shrugged.
Their horses did anyway. Maybe they took off after the man who killed Penrod.
And they'll be back when they're finished.
Axial grunted, as men do. And Tisala decided to take it as an affirmative.
Right. Then we'll take Aurig and bed him down with the rest of our sick men. I'll send someone back for Penrod.
She'd seen enough men in battle to know that battle fever and its aftermath took people strangely sometimes. As long as Aurig wasn't wailing and sobbing tomorrow, he'd be no worse off than any other soldier she knew.
I'll come back and get Penrod after I'm through with Aurig. Penrod and I have been comrades for too long to leave him to other hands.
Axial picked up the young mage without visible effort, though Tisala doubted there was a stone of weight between them.
I'll find Ciara and let her know what's going on.
She held Axial's gelding while he dealt with the difficulty of getting Aurig on his tall horse. She bit her lip. They didn't say anything disparaging about the northern horses. Some people you could tease, and others you didn't. Despite her father's comments, she did actually know which were which, and sometimes she even cared. Axial covered Aurig with the blankets from both of their bedrolls, but it didn't stop the shaking.
I've got to get Penrod's body.
Aurig didn't appear to hear him. After a moment, Axial stepped into his saddle. His horse let out an almost human sigh, but made no other protests.
That's it, foxy lad, he told his horse. I don't know why the aftermath of battles are always more a trial of endurance than the battles themselves, but that's how it is.
Axial was tired, too. There was some basis for human rumors of dwarven endurance, but he was half-human, and his arms told him that he'd been in a fight. A dull ache in his ribs let him know that he hadn't come out unscathed, but it would have to wait until after Penrod was taken care of.
You'd think after all these years Penrod would have learned to watch his back.
Axial stopped himself. Much easier to just accept death rather than rail at it, and he should have learned that by now.
Penrod's body lay undisturbed. The growing shadow gave the glen an unsettling feel, though it might just be that he was here alone.
Axial bent down to pick him up.
Sleep well, old friend, murmured Axial.
He hefted the body as carefully as if Penrod had been wounded. Ciara cried silently as the flames consumed Penrod. Axial rested his hands on her shoulders, but his eyes were dry. Penrod was neither the first nor the last comrade he'd fed to the fire.
He watched the bodies of the fallen blacken, dwarven eyesight letting him see what the flames concealed from the humans around him.
When Ciara turned away and buried her face in his chest, he wrapped his arms around the child.
Come, lass, he said. Let's get cleaned up and set up the tent. If we don't hurry, we'll be doing it in the dark. Your brothers will be back soon and ready for sleep.
It was nearing darkfall when Beckram and Kirkovenal came upon the camp. The dying embers of the funeral pyre told them that there had been a battle long before they arrived, so Beckram was careful to hail the camp before riding in. No one, he asked, knew where Ward was, but a delicate hand caught his sleeve while he was talking to yet another Arinstonian.
Ciara, he said. Then when he got a closer look at her,
what's wrong?
Did something happen to Ward? She started to shake her head, then shrugged instead, tightening her grip on his arm. She dragged him behind her. Kirkovenal dismounted too and followed them. Ciara took them to the center of the camp where Bekram saw Axiel at the cooking pot.
Bekram, Axiel said, what are you doing here?
Looking for my cousin. Do you know where Ward is? Axiel handed off his ladle with a,
mind you keep stirring or it'll burn on the bottom.
We're not sure where Ward's gotten himself off to, said Axiel. As far as we could determine, he, Tostin, and Bastia went off chasing Vorsag. We had a minor skirmish with the Vorsag earlier today. Afterward, we found Penrod dead in a small clearing on the far side of the battlefield. From the tracks, the three of them took off south. What do you want him for?
Bekram had the whole ride from Kallus to put Kirkovenal's information together with Ward's storytelling, and had come up with a few theories.
Cyrnak, an Estian, has been selling information to King Cariarn and probably his father, he began. At first it was military information, but the new king of Vorsag wanted more. He wanted magic. So the people working at the tavern bought artifacts and probably stole a few too. A couple of years ago, about the same time Cariarn's father became ill, Cyrnak got several new workers, including a slave girl, Bastia. Except she wasn't really a slave at all. She was working for Cariarn.
Bastia was working for Cariarn?
Asked Axiel. It's the only reason we could come up with for her to run to Hurog, explained Bekram. Bastia was no slave running for her freedom. Kirkovenal knows of at least one man she had killed and another she tortured. Cyrnak didn't give her orders. She gave them to him. We think that Bastia heard the stories about Hurog's treasure and went to check them out for herself, with her lover, Landislaw, in pursuit to make sure she made it back.
Axiel shook his head. I saw her feet after she ran to Hurog. I saw the scars on her back.
Kirkovenal spoke.
I've seen her slice the skin off a man's back for the sheer pleasure she took in it. I've seen Black Cyrnak, who the king himself is careful with, flinch from her anger. And I've seen her pretend to be an innocent maid or a whore as it suits her.
Bekram broke the silence that followed. Before Bastia escaped to Hurog, Landislaw cornered me and asked me about the treasure of gold and magic the dwarves are said to have left at the Gold Keep. It's nonsense, and I told him so. But Bastia could have been sent to check it out. The only thing I don't know is why she stayed with Ward. Even as he spoke, a possible answer came to him. Unless she found something. Something that she couldn't get right away. Ward rescues her and tells her he's headed to Arnstone, and she decides it might be the easiest way to get her information back to Cariarn.
Avernus thinks that the Vorsag have an enclave in Arnstone, said Kirkovenal abruptly. You said Ward, his brother, and Bastia left here headed south. Burl isn't too far from here.
Garanon's keep? Asked Bekram.
Kirkovenal nodded.
Where Landislaw's been holding court. Bastia's lover, Landislaw.
Who hates the king much more than he hates Vorsag, said Bekram.
You're speculating, said Axiel. What proof do you have?
When did Ward leave? Asked Bekram.
Right after the battle was over, Axiel replied.
I ask you, would any commander trained by Stala desert his men after a battle to go chasing after a few enemy soldiers? Asked Bekram.
When Axiel made no answer, Bekram said,
no, he wouldn't.
I think Bastia believes there's some treasure at Hurog, but she can't get to it without Ward, and she intends to use Tostin to make Ward help her get it.
Chapter 13. Wardwick. Obsession is a strange thing. It can be the fire that forges a true blade, but more often, it is the flaw that causes the sword to break. I dreamed of Hurog. It was so real I could smell the musty books in the library where I stood. Dusty tomes and languages no one could read anymore lined the shelves. Somewhere, there was a map of the secret ways, but the long, shallow drawer that held all the maps was gone. If I couldn't find the map, they would kill my brother. Tostin cried out, his voice muffled and distant, but it still hurt me.
You take care of Tostin and Ciara, my mother said. I have to tend my garden.
All right, mother, I said. Tostin's hand was warm in mine.
Ciara was a heavy bundle in my free arm. The sun was warm and bathed the flowers of the garden in a rich orange hue. "Where are the dragon's bones?"
Tostin screamed. His voice echoed in my head until the garden disappeared and I found myself in the dragon cave, deep in the heart of Hirog. I had to get out. But without Orog, I was trapped. I'd come in through the sewers, through the small tunnel that clamped down on me like a vice.
"Hirog's magic has been poisoned, child," whispered Orog's voice in my head. "It seeks out weakness in the blood of the dragon. Dreamers lose their way. Anger becomes berserker rage. Ambition becomes obsession. Hatred eats at your soul."
Hirog, I thought. Hirog means dragon. Hirog was gone when I woke up, gone so far that all I could feel was the empty place that was left, and I could have cried at the agony of the loss. My right hand was so cold it hurt. Icy waves traveled up my body from the battered platinum ring. I tried to pull my hand, to tuck it in my armpit to warm it as I did in the winter months, but all I did was rattle some chains.
I was in a small, dark cell with a high ceiling. A tiny window, two body lengths up the wall, let in a little light, but didn't do much to cut the fumes rising from the floor rushes, which should have been changed a decade ago. At first, I thought I was alone. But when I lowered my gaze to the floor, I saw a broken form lying in the moldering rushes. I forgot my discomfort.
Tostin!
The hand I could see was swollen and misshapen. I thought of hearing his screams in my dream and realized it hadn't been a dream at all.
Tostin!
I shouted it. I needed him to move because I couldn't tell if his ribs were rising at all. I couldn't bear it if he were dead. As if in answer to my cries, the cell door opened, and Carrion stepped through. He looked like the boy I remembered, a year or so older than I was. His fine brown hair was trimmed neatly at shoulder length. His clothing was expensive without being ostentatious, but it was his companion I stared at. I almost didn't recognize Bastia in the self-effacing woman who stood just behind the Vorsagian king. Her eyes lowered, and her head bowed submissively. Gone was the ragged warrior, and in her place was an immaculately groomed slave wearing a wisp of ivory silk that did little to hide her body. What had Carrion done to her?
"Ah, the guard told me you were awake, ward," said Carrion. I looked at him. "Sorry about your brother."
Carrion nudged Tostin with his boot.
"If I hadn't been chained, I'd have killed him.
The magic wasn't working against you. My archmage swore there was no one who could stand against it, but Bastia said you were a stubborn Northman, and it might not work."
He reached back and patted her on the top of her head like a huntsman patting his hound after a kill. I kept waiting for her to turn on him and almost didn't follow his next words.
"Which is why she brought both of you. She was right. You couldn't talk fast enough. Once he started screaming, it's too bad you didn't know what we needed. Who'd have thought that the Lord of Hurog wouldn't know how to reach his treasure without a wizard to guide him?"
Carrion gave me a chiding look.
"No matter. Bastia left a bit of hair in the chamber, so my archmage can use that to locate it. A waste of power. But with the dragon's bones, that will hardly matter."
The lust in his voice when he said dragon's bones reminded me of the way my father sometimes stared at a new chambermaid. I swallowed to wet my dry throat.
"Bastia?"
Behind his back, she smiled at me. It was a smile I'd never seen on her face before, sly and triumphant.
I said, "You're telling me all of this because..."
He smiled.
"I'm tired of all the old men who think they know better than I. I need young men. Men who understand youth doesn't mean stupid or weak.
Bastia tells me that..."